Hello, Dystoplicans. I'm Raul Guerrero, your host for the Dystopian Republic. Today's story begins on the early afternoon of January 5th, 2009. Bliss nicely asked Edmundo Jr. if he could stop looking at her, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio like they were unholy creatures. His phone rang and Flavia was on the caller ID, and surprisingly the girls let him answer it without telling him what to say. Edmundo said hello and his wife told him that she had Ambrosine with her in the car with a head full of knowledge. Flavia said that he would be humbled by the advanced stuff that today's kids were learning in school, elating him into wanting her to tell him all about it during their soup feast. She said that she will, and then some much later, with a sensual eye wink, then urged him to hang up because she was nearing heavy traffic. Edmundo ended the call after pushing Flavia to hurry home with Ambrosine, as Marti and Rocio pointed shotguns at his skull. Bliss helped herself to some milk and baked chocolate chip cookies while Andrina was scrabbling through the penthouse like a rat. Keeping Edmundo at gunpoint, Marti and Rocio watched the violence, keeping the soccer game paused, consume the whole stadium and spill beyond it when the match was canceled. The broadcast cut to a still image that told viewers that Gaeltel sports programming had been temporarily suspended. Marti tuned into Gaeltel's main channel, where live coverage of the game's cancellation continued with Gabino III on the phone. He assured viewers that he was not hurt and well out of harm's way, then said that moments before the violence started, he saw a group of teens brag about knocking a quote Bliss supporter on his rear end, and it seemed to him that the clique opposite to them were friends with or relatives of said kid. Gabino made it clear that he will never condone what she, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio did, but pleaded with viewers not to stoop to their vicious level. He recommended that anyone who sees the girls not approach or confront them, and instead notify the police forthwith. Andrina flipped over the bed Edmundo and Flavia shared, finding nothing but a safe that was shaped and sized like a briefcase. Bliss offended Marti and Rocio when she took the remote and changed the channel to Telezorro, as Toddy asked Bromelia's outgoing vice president Tulik how she felt about the coalition between Romulo and Blackburn Sr. Andrina shut off the power outlet the TV was plugged into and sank Edmundo's heart by asking him for the combination to his safe. When he refused to tell her, she had Marti and Rocio each give him a good strong shotgun whip, then had them deliver another, a third, fourth, fifth, and after the sixth, he relented and slowly uttered 0, 7, 1, and 8. Andrina put in the code Edmundo gave her, and it opened the safe, finding what she was looking for: diaries containing his and Flavia's innermost thoughts. She returned to the living room and told Bliss, Marti, and Rocio to look what she found, then heard someone unlock the front door's upper and lower locks. Holding Ambrosine's hand, Flavia opened the door and was shocked, then unamused, to see the penthouse in disarray. She suspected that Edmundo got drunk or had a party with his frat buddies from college, whom she barred from ever coming back to her home. Flavia shouted for her husband to get his sorry behind over here this instant, and the next thing she knew, there were three pistols pointed at her head and one aimed at Ambrosine. When she saw Andrina, Marti, Rocio, and Bliss's faces, she turned the purest white imaginable as her daughter screamed. The obliteration of the Jaramillo compound flashed before Flavia's eyes, as did the mural growing from where the property once stood. It was an assembly of tiny Catholic crosses that each had the name of someone who was killed by the explosions. Flavia didn't care what wrong they might have committed in their lives, because she was sure their sins paled in comparison to what Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio have done. Those flashes upsetted her into screaming that out of nowhere, commencing a shotgun whipping that horribly injured her and Edmundo. Ambrosine didn't see this, as she was knocked out by a thunderous strike to the skull cap, then left in the bathroom beforehand. Tulloch stormed out of Telesoro's headquarters in Bromelia City as staff gave her stares that reeked of appall and were twisted by disgust. The face she left with had the sureness of a woman enjoying the first seconds of not having a years-old weight on her shoulders. Tulloch ignored the stares she got from Romolo's security and was giddy at the good she was making on her vow to make him regret shaking hands with the liberals. On live TV, she just admitted to having a love affair with him, and that on many occasions he called her the one he really loved, and Everill an unattractive, sloppy, prissy drunk. Tulloch added that Romolo repeatedly spoke to her about his worry about Lydia growing up to have her mother's craving for the bottle. She said that he planned to legally separate from and divorce Everill the moment their daughter turned 18. Her confessing was fueled by how smug he sounded when he told her that he was gonna accept Blackburn's proposal for a coalition government and that she wouldn't be a part of it. Tulloch's tell for her limo driver to turn on Resenthres at full blast had him and the guards with her gasping, and even made one remind her of the trio's ongoing controversies. She told him that she was cognizant of that, then ordered that their music be played, and the song she got sickened her into rescinding that order versus the glum. Tulloch couldn't believe that Resenthres would sculpt such garbage, but was grateful that they're refusing to appease the gossipers. After the radio was shut off, she looked out the window with a smile that thought if only Romolo and Blackburn knew how far her power and influence went, knowing where to go after being sent home on Inauguration Day. Clocking out after her interview with Tulloch, Toddy drove to a condominium complex deep in Delgadopolis's metroplex. She silenced the deafening, bustling 9 floors below her with one slam of her apartment's front door, grinning after taking a deep breath. Now all but free of her muscle tension, Toddy rested on her bed while gripping the blanket with her hands and feet, imagining the expose on Alexis Sr. that she's been cooking up. The pre-production and production were done, but the post-production had just begun, and she expected that to be done by the end of next year. Toddy saw the autumn of 2012 as a realistic release date, but a text from Trinity that asked if they could talk interrupted her. She was cognizant of the manhunt for Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio, fearing over what those four will do next and who they'll prey on. Toddy fought Trinity and Eldon Sr. had the right to publicly defend themselves, accepting that ask to talk gladly. She packed her professional camera, tripod, lights, and cables, but when she was about to leave, another text came her way, and it was Audley's tell for her to tune into Telezorro. Toddy turned her TV on, set it to said channel, and was knocked for 12 by the police perimeter around the Free Luxor. The ticker stated that the authorities were in a standoff with Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio, who've taken refuge in one of the penthouses. It began with police responding to a breaking and entering call after a signal was relayed to them by a security firm, but when they raided said home, they were fired upon. The last things heard from said responders was their shouts for backup and confirmations that Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio were inside the penthouse. Contact had been made between the girls and police, coming in the form of the juvenile threatening to burn down the Ferdy Luxor if she and her friends weren't granted safe passage out of Bromelia. The four officers who responded to the call were alive but severely wounded. Flavia and Edmundo were still very conscious, and Ambrosine had been beaten to a pulp. How Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio held their guns, breathed, and teared up were indicative of four girls who refused to believe that there was no escaping their predicament. Their gun grips trembled, breathing quivered, and tears poured as helicopters hovered and police demanded their immediate surrender. The girls answered those demands with four gunshots through the brains of that number of officers, shooting and killing another two thereafter, then a seventh, an eighth, ninth, and eight more. All the while, they wounded a dozen others and evaded and dodged the semi-automatic fire that officers irately returned. The body armor and shields officers used were gelatin stuffed with pieces of plastic in the eyes of the bullets firing out of the girls' shotguns. Officers ran for cover in their vehicles and those of civilians and ordered everyone, including medical personnel, to cut and run. The return fire in response to the 17th fatality was followed by a four-night, three-day ceasefire that saw the weather take a drizzly turn. That time period saw what started after the soccer game's cancellation continue and be quelled within its venue's premises. The standoff's volatility prevented police from transporting their dead, leaving 17 bodies for nature to feast on. This led the networks covering it live to turn their coverage into audio-only broadcasts, secreting the icy white painted all over their anchors' faces. In the penthouse, the wounded officers had succumbed to their injuries at various hours throughout the second day of the standoff. Flavia and Edmundo had developed fevers as many of their injuries repeatedly stung them with pains hotter than boiling water, and Ambrosine's cuts and bruises were healing, but she was groggy from the girls taking turns forcing her awake each time she appeared to be in dreamland. Since the standoff began, Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio hadn't slept, sweating away the colognes and perfumes that hid Teal 2's death-like stench. Flavia's heart ached as if an ulcer had just broken open, and Edmundo was pasty-faced from knowing what that scent was when it burned his sinuses, but Ambrosine couldn't get enough of it. Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio were in wakefulnesses fueled by the fear that if they fell asleep now, then they'd wake up in jail cells all alone. The smell of Teal 2 was so effing dominant that it masked the stench Dave developed from having not showered in days. Bliss's mind turned a happily asleep Ambrosine into an anguishing Eldon Jr. struggling to sleep because of the pain of his slowly healing, cracked open skull injury. The voices of upset doctors and nurses belabored her for causing it, calling her Bloody Mary and having a classroom of kids whisper that to her and douse her from the waist down with blood. Bliss grasped her head with one hand, gripped her gun as tightly as she could, and yelled for those rotten little S's to effing stop. She screamed that it was an accident, swore that it was true to God, and blamed people like them for ruining her life. Her blaring outburst about her being damned the moment she had her first period in front of the whole school caused Ambrosine to shriek awake and scream that she loved her with all her heart. That made Bliss jolt like it zapped her, as Andrina, Marti, and Rocio were too far down the oceans of their own worlds to react or notice. Ambrosine repeated what she screamed for the next minute, then shouted that the girls' lives had value and purpose. Neither Flavia nor Edmundo were oblivious to what their daughter was trying to do, but they felt it was doubtful that her screams and shout could make the teal release or even loosen its grip. Pressured by her body to sleep, Andrina consciously dreamt up the afternoon she watched Andrino Sr. and Yolanda cackle about Andrino Jr.'s recent vanishing, ear-splitting shouts, and bitter whispers scorned her for failing to be there for her brother when he needed her protection the most, melting her self-assured mask like an ice cube sitting on a fire. Andrina yelled that she didn't do anything and accused Andrino Sr. and Yolanda of being the ones who set Andrino Jr. and that whole class up to be taken away. Her whitened face froze even whiter when she found herself surrounded by a crowd that had every teacher and peer she ever met from kindergarten to grade 12. The teachers she fought, liked, and respected her, and kids she believed were her friends chanted that she was a liar and cared only about herself more than hacked off. Andrina wailed for them to shut up until her voice got too raspy to loudly utter those two words. She aimed her gun at that crowd, but right when she was about to start shooting, one of her brain's nerve cells misfired, jolting her to a powerless crawl. Andrina wanted to get back up badly, but the pains that misfire left behind made that too painful, causing the crowd to laugh out their disgust at the pitiable face she was making. Marti's mind reverted to the morning she woke up in a pile of rubble, crying over seeing Michael and Juniper disappear into the previous night. She partly sat up and begged for help, but several of Roy Sr.'s teenage soldiers pummeled her for scats and giggles. Their adult supervisors either turned the other way, directed the beating, or became participants themselves, upping the degree of Marti's injuries from minor to serious. The adults had the teens lob her onto the river. Bliss would try to wash off Lucia's blood with years later walking away like guileless uppities right after. Marti was too hurt and overcome by pain to move, oozing tears out of her eyes until her eyeballs turned pink. She fell asleep at dusk, and as dawn neared, she awoke to a sad Andrino Sr. hugging her as an equally blue Yolanda watched on, holding a teary Andrina with one arm. Marti gave the Navarros a smile so fragile that even one touch by an old leaf could break it, stressing how sure she was that she'll survive, recover, and thrive anew. Her mind's return to the present left her with a grin that shook its head in rage at the short and meaningless life that blessedness wound up having. Marti hideously howled that the least Andrina could have done was have them be as together as that brother-sister pair in the fairy tale if she knew what she meant, sucking her right index finger with fetid lust. Rocio's mind turned her into the sweet, cool-headed girl Manola's lackeys abducted from the back of a Snake Eyes pizza one foggy, rainy evening in 2002. As Andrina and Marti were locked in a step dance battle, she got to know some kids who led her to the back of the establishment to feel the wet mist, only to be lured into a tiny truck that sped off. The feeling of fingernailing into Yamile's cuts dizzied Rocio with inhalation as brilliant and snuggly as the sun on a wintry noontime. That moment kept her demeanor sweet and head cool to the touch, but reduced them to a mask that hid a ravening want to shed blood. Her newly found desire was built over an understanding of what it tasted like and how its ways of exiting the skin made her feel, on and off from her first night in her bed after her ordeal onward. Rocio's mouth would water whenever she harked back on the blood that oozed out of Yamile. The improbability of ever living that again made Andrina and Marti the targets of her vomitous want and the sleepovers they'd have on most weekends dared her to go for it. But surprisingly, she only did once and almost got locked up for it. Rocio's mental return to the present slipped out a wonder of how different her life would be had she actually been put in juvenile detention. That self-ask never became a pensive ponder, for it was squashed by a belief that had she not partook in the rampage that began at that trail near Deneve, she would have perpetrated a mass murder in juvie. Rocio stated that the shedding of blood turned her on and pouted at how meaningless her life would be without that red stuff. With unbelievable sureness and composure, but on a sudden, 9 canisters spun through windows like discs, bounced off various appliances and furniture, and fogged the penthouse in smoke as they came to rest. The gas-masked militants among the police charged into the Ferdy Luxor with a readiness to arrest Bliss and her friends or kill them trying. They slightly broke into 2 throngs, one that consisted of the stout and ox-strong, leading another that was slender but agile. The front group had nothing but taking out the girls on their minds, while the one bringing the rear were obsessed with evacuating the few who sheltered in place. Outside, officers watched the canisters consume the penthouse like smoke from a house fire, hoping that it'll force Bliss and her friends to run into their arrests. As the front group charged on, the rear one went door to door, ordering those on the other side to get out of the Ferdy Luxor with their hands up. Most of the people who evacuated when the request for backup was made weren't in their suites or penthouses, hence the large number they counted in terms of evacuees. The militants reached the floor where the penthouse was and found it fogged over by what they identified as tear gas. Shielding their faces with armored left or right forearms, they carefully crowded around its door but found it cracked open. The militants raided the penthouse and found Flavia, Edmundo, and Ambrosine's daylights hanging on by a mostly torn off thread. Mother and daughter couldn't answer the questions of if they were okay or where the girls were, but father mumbled that the girls were roaming around well under the teal's influence. When the authorities outside received word of this, 3 minutes later, the militant leader ordered her follower troops not to evacuate any more people. This horrified her and her policing counterpart to storm the Ferdy Luxor, agreeing that this standoff must end at once. When officers and militants swarmed in, they were met with shotguns that fired like their machine counterparts, thanks to the stocks Edmundo possessed. Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio used the responders as shields and looked as though they were effed up on caffeine. The teal in their veins not only nullified the tear gas's effects, the interaction of potion and gas put their bodies' pedals to the metal. Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio had backpacks full of ammo. The red, green, white, and blue of what Ambrosine gladly carried to school. The girls spent the next hour running from and shooting at officers and militants, and used that time to slowly but surely put on the armor worn by their victims. Stumbling upon an opening in a northeast corner seafood bistro, they threw aside their shields and escaped. The helicopter initially hovered after them, but a strong thunderstorm made following them too dangerous, forcing it to rush for the nearest heliport. Its pilot reported that the girls were last seen running northwest in the wilderness near the Fruity Luxure, southwest of the wider Crescento Coast area, with a tone that saw a pink slip up ahead. Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio evaded the officers and militants with ease, sheltering in an idle cellar that damp brushwood, draining water and moss hid, closing and locking its door, pulled the plug on the weather outside, nosediving the girls onto a floor coated in a flour-like powder. The powder was all over them, and its grassy smell and woodsy taste cradled them into an at-peace, thankful sleep that lasted for 13 uninterrupted hours. The cellar's advanced age spared its stone and metal of decay and rust, and its back wall had a passage carved onto it that went as follows: to the non-potioned and those blessed by the good ones, feel the powder, for it'll bring your nice day to a pleasant end. As for those hurting or cursed by the evil potions, may this white made by Hobsbugo Jr. send you to a sleep you'll wake up from, suffering no more, or in pains worsening no longer. Andrina rolled over on her back, stood up, opened her eyes, and bowed her head as if she was glad to have made it out of a war zone alive. When Marti woke up, she was kissing the floor, but the way it pleasured her insides made her smile like she was as good as new. Rocio awoke and grinned at the cellar's every inner inch, thanking it for incinerating the darkness in her and resurrecting a long dead light. Bliss's eyes opened to herself looking up at the passage with a convalesced calm that saw her once filthy slate be clean again. She told Andrina, Marti, and Rocio to check out what she just read, and when they did, it adulterated what would have been three girls in pure solace. Puzzled by the reactions, Bliss read the passage again and realized that she and her friends might have been potioned, but had no idea how the exposures occurred or which color they came into contact with. Then she, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio looked down and discovered four large spots where the white powder had turned teal, to their devastation. Bliss and her friends knew exactly what they were looking at, as its malodor snapped them out of their good feeling, tensing them into hearing around for wailing sirens, hunting cops, and circling helicopters. Hearing none of that made the girls slightly less tense, but it wasn't enough to keep them from sweating over how wanted they must be now. Rocio wondered how the hell she and her friends could possibly continue the run from the law after their ghoulish handiwork at the camp and ruinous standoff at the Fertilux shore. Andrina didn't care how futile running was, for all that mattered to her now was prolonging the inevitable for as long as possible. Marti was losing the battle to hold back her tears at how poorly she'd fare in prison, as her reputation as a toucher soured her stomach. Bliss implored God to absolve her of the evils she and her friends have committed, vowing to never kill or maim again. She sobbed her impassioned pleas for fate to let her, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio live normally once more. When the Amen Bliss ended her prayer with broke her down, it reminded her friends of that despondent girl they stood over. Andrina, Marti, and Rocio got themselves together and looked down at her the way they did that pivotal afternoon. Bliss somewhat came to from her sorrow, looked up at their pitying stand over her, and smiled as a tear went down her right cheek, mouthing a thanks that didn't need to be loud for it to strike a chord. Marti and Rocio helped her up, and Andrina said that she mayve no idea how she or her friends could be free again, but they will find a way, whether in the light or shade. When Bliss unlocked and opened the cellar's door, the gate that held nature back was unlatched as well, securing their insubstantial solace over getting away yet again. They looked northwest and spotted a sign they didn't see during the storm, saying that for the wanted and unwanted, salvation was that way. The girls followed that arrow, the five that succeeded it in half-mile intervals, and stopped when an octagon told them to behold. They did and saw syringe, sharp barbed wire, thickly fencing a dilapidated yard of cabins that stood strong despite the rot gnawing at them. Bliss envisioned a refuge that not only had the soil to support her, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio in perpetuity, but the infrastructure to establish and maintain a community too. Her friends didn't share her optimism, as the yard was a dreadful, revolting reminder of their place of birth and first vivid memories. The fence's thickness was about to make Bliss lament about being so far away from the salvation, despite being close enough to see it in detail, but seeing it have a badly made hole the size of a bear 30 yards to her left made her thank the heavens for leading her to something real for a change. Bliss was first to crawl through the opening and had no problem doing it, but she had to help Andrina, Marti, and Rocio make their crawls. Once all four were standing again, they ran for the cabin right behind the hole, but didn't make it to its front porch as casually dressed cops surrounded them. The girls tried to run, resist being pinned down, and fight away the handcuffs to no avail, but they did manage to wail like children who've been lied to, and their arresters didn't feel sorry for them. Their tears and the warmth radiating from their bodies cracked a couple of the cops but most remained steadfast to the task of putting them behind bars, cuffed by their wrists and ankles. Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio were put into different military vans, then transported to the Crisanto Coast jail, where they received a deafening ovation from other inmates, making them feel popular for the first time in who knows how long. This reaction unchained the remnants of teal that survived the powder, blending with its captor to create a light turquoise that gave the girl's worldly ambitions. Toddy and millions of others were going about their evenings in fearful, hopeless dazes over the girls having escaped yet again. But at 10, Romolo took the podium and told Bromelian citizens that it was his honor to announce that Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio have been arrested. His announcement got celebratory huzzas out of every quarter of the mainland. But for many in society's shadows, the arrest was merely the end of a wider story's beginning. On January 10th, Romolo was inaugurated for his first full term as president of Bromelia, and it wasn't before the jam-packed crowd Joby Sr. enjoyed in 2005. Most of those who showed up were loyal to him or were compelled by law to be there, but neither Everell nor Tulloch attended, and even Blackburn contemplated but decided not to ditch it. Romolo called the arrests of yesterday a miracle only he could bring about, for it was an end that will not, and he repeated, will not be undone. His vow to resign if Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio got away with what they've done shocked many, but the fact that he said that stressed how sure he was that the girls' days of murdering and mutilating were over. Lydia sat at Romolo's side, felt lonely because Everell wasn't with her, and was disgusted with herself when she saw Mavis and Nigella in their lonesomes. Xander Jr. watched the inauguration from his landlord's office with a frown that felt nothing but pity for a man he respected, admired, and wanted to be like. Austin, Andre, Arlo, and Avery refused to watch, and so did Maya. But in her case, she was too ill to endure hearing Romolo speak. Most of the tenants in the Soviet-like block Xander oversaw couldn't find a reason to view the inauguration of a man who couldn't care less about them. Five doors to the right of where the Palencia cousins lived, a cousinly duo toasted mixed berry mocktails shortly after getting their passports, taking them a step closer to their move out of Bromelia. The pair consisted of Whitting and Aroline Blaich, young adults who were sick of living in what they've overheard a few call the dystopian republic. They spent their January 10th watching the Pluralistopia film for the third time in 3 weeks and did not give one darn about how well or poorly the documentary was received, because for them, all that mattered was that it kept the flames that were their desires for better futures alive. The staff at Tel Neutral were following the Bliss, Andrina, Marti, Rocio case closely and planned to cover as much of the trial as legally possible. All the while, they were in the early stages of producing a new social experiment involving a car and the United States. The mugshots taken of Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio respectively conveyed feelings of melancholy, humiliation, indignation, and stolidity. Those images were spread across the internet, including the Pricep website, which allowed people like Roscoe Jr. to see them. He was in the sanctity of his office at Roscoe Nunez Realty in Samalba, staring spiteful holes into the girls' mugshots on the Guiltel website. Ever since BS2 announced that Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio were on the most wanted list, Roscoe's contacts around the world kept him up to speed with the happenings of that manhunt. He knew that there was no way those girls would ever see freedom again, considering all the lives they've ended or destroyed. Roscoe found that unfortunate, for in his eyes, Bliss and her friends have proved to him that they were capable and formidable. The light bulb in his head drew something that could work, but had to be organized and done at full tilt. Roscoe was aware that Bromelia had a prison in Clos Mounds, La Costa del Norte, where the worst of the worst were housed under super maximum security. He read that every single prisoner who tried to escape it was shot dead without ever having left its grounds. Roscoe had until the girls' steps into the Clos Mounds Federal Penitentiary to pick them up, for they were as good as dead the second that first door locked. His expectation that Bliss and her friends would be rushed there immediately after their sentencings was his cue to make a few phone calls returning home with a hope that his drawing will succeed. Placed in different jail cells, the girls were by themselves, but had their spirits lifted by the supportive chants and screams of other inmates. The morning of January 12th brought them as one before a judge, and to their shock, none of the charges on their most wanted posters were read. But that was because a much, much worse one was terrorism. Federal prosecutors decided to prosecute the girls as terrorists instead of serial killers, and this sparked calls for Bromelia's moratorium on the death penalty to be lifted. But as for the arraignment itself, all Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio could do was plead not guilty to the charge, as the shock of having it levied against them froze their voice boxes solid. Roscoe was amused by how some pundits in the media thought the arrest would mark the end of the girls' nifty reign of terror. That wasn't the mood he was feeling on Pricep, as scrolling through that site made him feel that a precedent had been born. He imagined a battlefield where the supporters of Bliss and her friends battled those of their victims, and he, Isidro, and Wynne found it adorable and scrumptious. Upton Jr. also felt that the arrest won't end what the girls have unleashed, as some of his subordinates were sitting in jails across Bromelia, such as the one where those four were being held. An old man and woman sat out on the porch of a home far away from Bromelia, sharing a newspaper with this headline: "Teenage Serial Killers in Bromelia Arrested." Those two felt compelled by God to bring Bliss, Andrina, Marti, and Rocio to an environment where the girls will be loved, cared for, and not judged. And as fate would have it, their desire to free them will collide with more than just Roscoe and Upton's wants to recruit them. And that was Luxurmare. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the story I just gave. Share this show with everyone you know. Make sure they share it with everyone they know. Check out my website at www.rss.com/podcasts/The Dystopian Republic. Send me your respectful questions and constructive feedback at RaulGuerreroJr95@gmail.com. On that note, I'm Raul Guerrero, and come again for another gripping, thoughtful, and sinister episode of The Dystopian Republic.